Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back into the Stat Sheet Podcast, everybody. We are so excited to be back on board with you. Simon Short's in the building. Ronan Summers in the building. You are in the building. And, of course, we couldn't do it without you, so we appreciate you being here with us. Lots of NFL to cover. The wild card weekend. While not all the games were interesting, there were lots of storylines coming out of a lot of the games. So we're going to be covering all of that. We're going to start off with the Monday night game. Bucks over the Eagles. I think some people had the Bucks maybe winning. I don't think anybody had the Bucks ripping the Eagles a new one. So here it is, 32-9. Simon, first impulse.
When we did our preview last week and we talked about the game a little bit and we talked about some of the matchups a little bit, and then quick plug on the Simon Short podcast, I did an additional preview with Josh Lemisand. And we did a preview, and we talked about some stats that we liked for the game. Everything told us the Bucks were going to win this game. And I think all of us collectively were just like, I mean, the Eagles can't lose to Baker Mayfield, right?
Right.
But we had no real – and we all – like last week, all three of us on this podcast, we picked the Eagles to win the game, even though we gave no real reason why it should happen.
No.
And I think that was how just about everybody felt going into the game this weekend, and it played out the way we anecdotally said it was going to, and statistically and analytically said it was going to. But in our heart of hearts, I think everyone was like, Eagles got a lot of problems. The Bucks have just enough things going just as well enough as they need to take advantage. And it all played out. And the Eagles, when we were on this pod last week, we also thought AJ Brown was going to be playing. He was ruled out kind of later in the week. So that, I think that obviously made a big difference. You know, their only real source of offense was going to Devonta Smith. But still, I think even as the game was going, it was like, yeah, okay, we kind of, like, not to your point, not to this degree, but we kind of saw this playing out, this game playing out kind of the way it is. Ronan, how about you, man? What did you think about this game?
You know, last week, obviously, we noted Philly's struggles, but heading into the playoffs, we expected, you know, a little bit of a jump start, and it was just kind of what the same we've seen for the past 5-6 weeks, guys. But honestly, I do want to kind of give kudos to Jalen Hurts, because he was only sacked 3 times during that game. He was running for his life all game long. Tampa was able to get that interior pressure pretty much from the jump, and he was not comfortable whatsoever. He had that dislocated finger, which, you know, at the very least can mess with his head. So he ended up, you know, 25 of 35, 250 yards, a touchdown, no picks. But, man, that Philly offensive line, at least the interior of it, it was getting dismantled. But on the flip side, guys, Baker Mayfield, that's the story. I mean, this was a guy who came in last year to the Rams on like a day notice, win a game, and he's back to being a backup. He might have won himself the starting gig next year just by his regular season performance. I think he hit career highs in both passing yards and touchdowns. So, I mean, he had a phenomenal year. He's playing with, you know, great receivers, a pretty solid offensive line. Tampa Bay's offensive line has held up a little bit better than I think we anticipated. So just kudos to both quarterbacks. But obviously, Baker Mayfield, 337 yards, 3 touchdowns, just torching Philly's defense, mm-hmm. Simon.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, Baker Mayfield in this one was I mean, they said it. I think they called him Scrappy Doo at one point, and then they kind of kept that nickname going. I mean, the guy just plays with that chip on his shoulder, and as long as that's there, everything's going to be all right. And look, it's going to happen again next year. We'll see what happens. Mike Evans is a free agent. You know, does he leave? And then it's It's all on my back, and maybe that goes poorly. I don't know. I could see them drafting a quarterback here late in the first round, right? They're the team that reaches on the like fourth or fifth quarterback in the draft at the end of the first round, and then they let those guys kind of compete in a good kind of quarterback matchup in training camp. I could see that happening, but I could definitely see Baker being back with this team next year. You know, you mentioned the offensive line. I forget if he, I think he got an all the all pro, one of the two all pro spots. Not the first one, but maybe he got the second. I can't remember now. But Tristan Wirfs going to the left side. I don't think we've talked about it since the move happened in training camp. But man, that dude was on another level switching from the left side. And he was very honest going into the season about, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with this. I had a lot of anxiety when they told me that they wanted to do it. I don't know how I'm going to do. And the guy is just as good as he was on the right side, which was where he's played really his whole life. And I mean, yeah, just incredible stuff. And really came back together quickly after all the injuries and turnover they sustained last year. They're kind of right back to being an above average group on the line, Ben.
Yeah, Simon, what I'm coming away from this game with, and y'all are right about Baker Mayfield, by the way. I mean, anybody could have had him during the off season. He ends up here. He's kind of the leftovers on the carousel, right? And here he is in the playoffs. I think he's, what, the first Buccaneers quarterback to go for 300 yards and three touchdowns in a game. So eat your heart out, Tom Brady. I mean, it's who would have figured it? They've gotten farther this year than they did last year, right? So go figure. Hats off to him. But on the Philly side, I really come away with so many questions. I mean, man, what happened to 10-1? What happened to the defense that was so good early in the season? What happened to a running game that could literally push anybody around at the middle of the season? We kind of know what happened to Hurt, so I don't throw too much at him. But, I mean, the rest of it, what happened, you know? And we could say, well, coordinators, which I think that's a part. But, man, the coordinators were going at the start of the season when they were going 10-1. So why did it go from so great to so bad? They're going to spend the entire offseason figuring it out. The fans are going to let them know how unhappy they are from here until the next season starts. And if they don't win, they're going to hear it then too. So I think that the running game really disappointed me tonight, though. Man, you're looking at 15 carries for 42 yards. This was the DeAndre Swift who went off for like a buck 50 two different times, right, early in the season. And everybody's like unstoppable. And, man, I mean, this is just a royal flameout. This is beyond disappointing, Simon. Questions everywhere for this team.
Yeah, and this was a bad matchup for the Eagles. I mean, on top of just everything that had been going wrong, because for as great as Hurts has played over the last, I don't know, two and a half-ish years, the one thing that's always given him trouble since he's been a starter is performing against the blitz. Now, Rona mentioned it. He very admirable job, and I think at one point they put up the next gen stats on his like completions against the blitz, and like he was like 10 of 13. He was getting complete, but it was for like 50 some yards. Like it was a lot of check down stuff, which again, like, good for him for not, you know, turn the ball over, not taking a ton of sacks, but still, just this team since Hurts has been the starter overall hasn't even been very effective against blitzing teams, and I think that bled into them in the run game. Now, why, you know, we've got 15 attempts to 35 attempts run versus pass, and especially, I mean, that first quarter it was like 13-3 or something like that, run versus pass or pass versus run. And this team with the struggles it had, and then you have AJ Brown out, I mean, how do you not build your whole week around wanting to run the football? Yeah, Deion, like just like a couple weeks ago, they ran for 170 yards in like back-to-back games. So it was so hot and cold throughout the year that it does make me think it is something with the offensive coordinator and something with the play calling, where it's, are we not, you know, paying attention to the defensive tendencies of the other team enough in terms of when we need to run versus when we need to pass, or are we just reacting to what we're doing? Oh, we didn't have a good time running the ball. Let's try and run it better next week. So we'll focus on it then. Is it not, you know, when we talk about Packers Chiefs, Packers Cowboys, right? There's some very clear issues with like personnel and alignment and when to run versus when to pass in that game that you can point to. I wonder if it has something to do with the game planning aspect from Monday to Saturday for Philly when it comes to this run game. Because, yeah, I mean, 10 carries for 34 yards for DeAndre Swift here. When you don't have A.J. Brown is pretty miserable, Ben.
It is, especially considering, again, this team was dominant and unstoppable at running the football during the first, say, 6 weeks of the year. And then we saw that running game kind of start to sputter and disappear. And then here in a playoff game, where they really could have used it because Hurts wasn't obviously himself. They really could have used that running game, and it doesn't even appear like they tried too hard to do it, you know. So, I mean, you go from a team that literally is dominant at it to, well, we're not even going to try that hard to push it. So, I mean, that's really where you're coming from is, man, start of the season till now, it's crazy. I did feel like there was a moment here in the third quarter, 16-9, I felt like, hey, the Eagles got a chance here. They're probably actually going to just come back and pull this off. I still felt like that. Now, A, did you feel that way? But B, man, once that safety hit, the quick touchdown hit, it's game over at that point. I didn't feel that anymore. But I did feel like the Eagles had a chance here, even kind of midway, early third quarter.
Yeah, you know what? 16-9, I was in the same boat. What kind of sealed the deal in my eyes was the whenever Philly went for the field goal, right, and then I think it was McCollum lined up offsides or was whatever.
Yep.
And so Philly went ahead and went for it. I think it was 4th and 5 around like the 30, 40 yard line, probably 30, 40, yeah, somewhere in that area. And Philly didn't get it. And I think that was kind of what sealed the deal. A lot of the momentum kind of just went Tampa Bay's way after that. Now, obviously, because it went from 16-9 to 32-9, right? So it got away from Philly pretty quick soon after. But had they gotten that first down, right, kept trucking, even just taking that field goal, right, declined the penalty and take the 3, move on, who knows what the game would have looked like. But Philly ends up with only 9 points after, you know, a star-studded cast, right? Obviously without A.J. Brown, but this was an offense that we were expecting fireworks. And, I mean, aside from Devontae Smith just going off, not a whole lot, Ben.
Yeah, ugly game, 9 points. There were moments we thought, hey, maybe they crawl back in. It never materialized. Simon, final notes on the game, man.
Yeah, the other thing with the run game, and this speaks to that final or that drive with the turnover on downs as well. No real designed run game for Jalen Hurts. I think that would have done well to counteract the blitzing, right? He had 1 carry for 5 yards, and I'm pretty sure that was just on a scramble to get away from the blitz, like Ronan was talking about. That play was from the 17-yard line, and it's a 4th and 5, and they are taking a shot to the end zone because throwing to Devonta Smith, heck of a game for him. I mean, talk about wide receiver one stuff, 8 catches, 148 yards on 12 targets. But, like, you can't find Dallas Goedert in the flat for 5 yards. You can't check down to DeAndre Swift. You can't hit. There's nobody else without A.J. Brown. So why is there – where was the design run game for Jalen Hurts in this one? I mean, I get that he's got the finger thing. He's been dealing with the knee this year, and maybe it's just a culmination of that. But, like, it's the playoffs, man. That would have been a big deal to go for the end zone there, and I think it changed a lot of the game. So, weird stuff on the offensive end for the Eagles. It had been weird all season. Chalk it up to, you know, post Super Bowl hangover for the Eagles. Really, this whole year, Ben.
All right. Well, the Eagles. Obviously, we've said it more than once. Long off season. Lots of questions. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they can find answers for next year. Sometimes it's not that easy. So, Simon, we've got your Steelers, man. Mm. They gave it a shot. They gave it their best. It didn't materialize. Vegas turned out to be right. It just wasn't, at the end, that close of a game. So, tell us what happened.
I mean, really, the story, it is all in the first quarter. You know, you have 2 punts in a row on you get 1 first down across those 2 series. You fumble the ball on the one time it feels like you're moving it a little bit. You get another punt. You get all the way down to the 3-yard line. You throw an interception with Mason Rudolph there. And so just continuously through the whole first half, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're not giving yourself a chance. Now it took till, you know, the end of the second quarter there. They get the block field goal, which is, I mean, just so Steelers that this is what's going to spark them, a block field goal on the north side of the 2 minute warning. And you run a good 2 minute offense and you get down the field and you score a touchdown, and that gives them a little juice. And I'm going to hand it to them, because the Steelers, listen, they've given them more than like 28 points in their last five playoff games or something like that, which is ridiculous. But until the late touchdown here in this game, I mean, this was a one possession game for a lot of the second half, and they got themselves back in it, because it would have been really easy for this team to have blocked that field goal, right? You score off of the momentum on that. Then the end of the half comes, the Bills get the ball to start the second half. It would have been really easy for the Bills to just kind of march down the field, zap all the momentum, and end the game right there. Steelers 3 and out. They force the 3 and out on them. They go down. They get a score themselves. They trade field goals. They trade touchdowns. They're in this game for a lot of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, walking into Buffalo, you're completely outmatched from a talent perspective. You're rolling in with Mason Rudolph as your quarterback. And you don't have TJ Watt, who is the literal MVP and game changer for the Steelers. So, severely outmatched. And they shot themselves in the foot with the turnovers at the beginning of the game. And that's not to take anything away from the Bills. There's a lot of Steelers fans that are doing the refs helped the Bills. Josh Allen did a fake slide and the holding. BS, man. The Bills were the better football team. We'll get into some of the stuff the Bills did here in a minute. But the first takeaway that I, as a homer Steeler fan, will choose is Steelers put themselves in good positions for the middle quarter and a half or so, and the beginning and end of this game shot themselves in the foot pretty significantly. Ronan, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, you know, Simon, I think you explained it very well. Not a whole lot to add on it, but one thing that caught my eye, guys, every time we talk about the Bills on this podcast, what do I bring up? The run game. And what did we see from the Bills and the super wild card weekend? 34 attempts, 179 yards. That's 5.3 per clip. One touchdown. Now, Josh Allen did have a 52-yard scamper for a touchdown. But you take that away, that's still 127 yards total for the team. Good day on the ground for the Bills. Opened up things in the passing game, obviously, because Josh Allen, 21 of 30, so nothing super flashy, but three touchdowns, 203 yards on top of that. So nothing, you know, jaw-dropping in terms of offensive production, but it was enough to get the job done. It was an ugly game. It's kind of what you expect the Steelers to put up, just kind of like a fight. Every year, just kind of that annoying team that's going to make you earn it. And the Bills did. They just played a good football game today. It's going to be fun to see how they go about home field advantage, because that's something that they've lacked in the later rounds of the postseason, Ben.
So I'm with you on the Bills rushing, even if you take away Josh Allen, which I would really rather see Josh Allen around five or six carries a game, not up at that 8-10 level. But be that as it may, they're doing what they got to do to win. Even if you take that away, it's 26 carries for 104 yards, which is still representative. And during this winning streak, they haven't done that every game, but the games I thought they looked the best, I would say this, what, six, seven-game winning streak, were the games in which they were running the football somewhere between 75 and 120 yards by the running backs, with Allen tacking his on, and then Allen doing 200, 250 yards passing. So it doesn't have to just be the Josh Allen show. And what that does, it keeps the defense honest, keeps the defense focused on everything. And then Josh Allen has just a lot more freedom to go and do his stuff, work his magic. And I really think that's the recipe for Buffalo in most of these games. Again, you'll not do that every time, but in most of these games, it needs to be, let's get some kind of a running game going just to give Josh Allen just enough help to do his thing. Simon?
Yeah, and great call by you, and great call by offensive coordinator Joe Brady, head coach Doug McDermott, quarterback Josh Allen, because then they made the adjustment. I think they had like 130 of the 200 passing yards that Josh Allen had in the first half. And the Steelers came out and they adjusted and they played way better against the pass. But that was when they, yeah, that's when it was the James Cook show. And that was when, I forget when exactly, Josh Allen had his big run. I think that was earlier in the game. Second longest touchdown run by a quarterback, by the way, in NFL playoff history. So shout out to that. The Steelers defense without TJ Watt, still, it was an admirable effort, still good enough to find one thing to take away, but only one thing to take away at a time when you're going against a team as good as the Bills. Because yeah, Josh Allen was just slinging it in that first half. Dalton Kincaid here, Stephon Diggs here, you know, Khalil Shakir went and had that fourth quarter touchdown. That was sick. And it's just like, okay, you're going to play back and you're going to defend the pass. Well, here's James Cook. We're going to get him 18 carries of the rock in this one. So really good job by the Bills, not only starting the game multidimensional because they did a little bit, but sensing that halftime adjustment, getting slowed down a bit and saying, okay, let's run the ball. Let's be efficient. Let's control the clock a little bit. Because that's how you win these games, especially when you're dealing with the weather and when you're dealing with, you know, opponents who are coming out and doing things better than you thought. You have to be able to adjust mid-game. So I thought they did a really, really nice job of that in this one, Ben.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's an obvious adjustment, but some people don't seem to have the feeling to do that. The Patriots have done that over the years, over the past 20 years, better than anybody, just sensing where the game is going and going that way until somebody stops them. And, you know, it may not seem like a big difference, but the past year, year and a half for Buffalo, some of these games, they've got 30 yards rushing, 50 yards rushing, 60. When you're up in the 70 to 100 and it's not a load that Allen has to carry, it really does change what the defense is focused on. They're getting jabbed and punched and body blowed while they're all watching Josh Allen. You know, so it is a big difference. And knowing, sensing as an offensive coordinator when to do that, just makes a huge, huge difference. Simon, anything else you got here on Steelers and Bills?
Yeah, we should just note for moving forward here, we're not going to do our separate injury segment in this one, but the more linebackers hurt for the Bills. Terrell Bernard seems, the initial reports are a sprained ankle. He did have to get carted off in this one, so we'll see how badly that's sprained. Baylen Specter, the other linebacker who was making a start today for Terrell Dotson, who got hurt a week ago, I don't remember what his injury was off the top of my head, but he was out of this one, ruled out. So the team was on its, like, let me try to count them now, the fourth and fifth string linebackers of Dorian Williams, who was a recent mid-round draft pick, maybe even this year as a rookie. Yeah. And then AJ Klein, who's like a 35-year veteran or something like that. He's just been around forever. So two right. Very different guys. And they played well. They did a good job. So, you know, good job by those guys. But those will be injuries for us to monitor as we get ready for the divisional matchups next weekend, as Ben mentioned, against the Chiefs.
Buffalo just needs to switch against Kansas City to a 5-1-5 defense, okay? So 5 D linemen, slow down that running game, and 5 defensive backs, because Kansas City is not going to throw the football very far downfield anyway. So just flood all of Mahomes' low zones, right? Just flood it.
We should say Kyrie Elam had a pretty good game in this one too. The first-round rookie from last year who was benched for a majority of this season, he was forced to play because of Rasul Douglas, the cornerback that they got from the Packers, being out of this one. He came up with that interception in the red zone. He had another near interception in the second half. So when you first said they need 5 DBs, I was like, do they have 5 DBs they want to play right now? But because yeah, that's pretty rough for them too. Maybe just 7 defensive linemen and then 5 guys floating around behind them, and they just, you know, see what happens.
They gotta have more defensive backs than linebackers at this point, right? They started off the season with better depth at safety. I don't know, man.
Hoyer and Hyde, you guys just run around back there. We're gonna blitz everybody else, and you guys just make it all work out. It'll be fine.
Y'all go double team Kelsey. We'll cover everybody else.
The other receivers will drop the ball next week. Don't worry about it.
Yes. All right. The best game of the week by far. Lions over the Rams, 24-23. Ronan, I know you're hurting, but still a pretty good season for the Rams that I don't really think anybody saw coming.
Absolutely, Ben. No, obviously the Lions were the favorite in the matchup. The Rams, right, they weren't expected to be terrible. I think some did expect them to, you know, maybe go out there and put up a 4-5 win season. But I think they were expected to be better than they were last year, right? Tons of injuries last year, for at all position groups. So, you know, this year Stafford was relatively healthy, still has good football in him. That was a big question mark heading into this season, and I think he answered those because he had a good season. I mean, a Pro Bowler. I think you can argue about, you know, maybe a couple other guys getting in over him, but. McVay seems to be reinvigorated with this squad. You think got three or two third round rookies who combined for, I believe, 17 sacks on the season, right? Between Kobe Turner and Byron Young. You've got Kyren Williams who popped up from last season's draft class. A very impressive season from the Rams. But it is, unfortunately for the Rams, the Lions' time. Good Lord, did they look good last night. Detroit is rocking. That I'm so glad that football is back in Detroit, right? Good football. I don't know if it, back is the right word. I'm glad good football is in Detroit now. Jared Goff and his revenge game, absolutely. Dang, you're perfect, right? 22 of 27, 277 yards, a touchdown. He played – basically ball management football. He did exactly what the Lions needed him to do, and he did it very well. He missed on very, very rarely. And that Lions run game, guys, good Lord. That offensive line is mean. Those running backs, well, Montgomery's mean. Gibbs is quick. So, I mean, pick your poison. You're going to get burnt either way. An all-around great game. You know, there are people talking about, you know, Simon, kind of similarly to the Steelers game. A lot of Rams fans are kind of talking about the calls, right? Puka, seeing the last offensive play of the game or of the year, I guess, kind of got held and then got hit afterwards. And then there was Stafford who got eviscerated by, I think, Aleem McNeil, where it looked like Stafford's eyes rolled to the back of his head. But you can also go back to the beginning of the game whenever there was that phantom call on Taylor Decker. So, I mean, I think just in general, the refs were kind of sketchy for both sides. So something you'd love to see get cleaned up, because if they're, if you're going to call it, right, call it. But if you're not, don't. It was kind of the wishy-washiness of how the game was called. But it didn't hinder from the experience of the game, right? It was a beautiful story, great storytelling for both sides, really, right? Put a bow on the Rams, got to keep working on it, and it's the Lions' time, Simon.
It's the Lions' time. Listen, I am the first one to get on here and say mean things about Jared Goff whenever possible. This was Jared Goff's, I think, best game in a long time. I mean, we get the graphic of Rams Chiefs, right? That game 4 or 5, whatever years ago it was now. Every once in a while that pops back on Twitter. But in terms of just like pushing the ball downfield, tight window throws, playing clean in the pocket, not doing anything, because he pretty often, like, there are plays we forget that he makes because they don't actually result in a turnover. This one, there was one, but there was only one. It was that first half. He was about to get sacked by, was it? It was Aaron Donald. It was Aaron Donald. And he does the, like, backwards behind the line of scrimmage, two-hand chest pass to Sam Laporta, which, like, doinks down at everybody's feet and is almost like fumble sixth. But he found, which I texted my Lions pal about, and I was just like, there it is. There's the play. Leo pointing me. But he bounced back, right? That was the only bad play of the game. And I mean, he was, yeah, 5 incompletions and like I said, good throws too, tight window throws and everything. All that's very nice. And I agree with what Ronan said. It's a great story. I feel like I'm the Debbie Downer on here a lot. I'm very happy for the Lions. It's so fun. I'm ready to continue to cheer for them. But I think the real story is the Rams should have won this game, and I'm not even talking about the officiating. Ronan and I were talking about just before we hit record here. What did we say, Ronan? 0 of 3 in the red zone, 3 red zone trips, and you get 9 points out of that in a game you lose by 1. That's tough, man. And listen, I wrote down how those red zone trips went here on for a couple of them. So the first red zone trip in the second half. So in the first half, it was very similar in the first half. So this is their first, essentially their first and second red zone trip. Everything was out to one side of the field. And that's like my pet peeve. So this one here specifically was their second red zone trip and first one of the second half. And you have a play action rollout to the right. And really only Puka Nacua is the only really real receiver in the play. And at this point, he's had like 110 yards in the game. So he's double covered. And then you got a jet sweep to Puka Nacua, which again, if Puka Nacua is going in motion, if that defense sees 17, they're going to go get him, right? They're not being fooled by that. So jet sweep, you lose a couple yards. And then on third and 12, you have a shallow crosser to Cooper Kupp that goes for 4 yards. For two of those three plays, you know, we limited ourselves to only going to the right. And then the second red zone attempt, you have a run for no gain with Kyren Williams, a screen to the backup running back, Rivers, because Kyren Williams got hurt on that play. And then a 14-yard pass attempt fade route to Cooper Kupp on the opposite dash or on the other side from you. It just felt like they were making it so hard on themselves in the red zone. You know, they were running the ball really well all game. I wouldn't have mind seeing more of that. I would have liked to have seen them use the middle of the field more, right? On third down in this one, they were hitting Puka Nacua a ton for yards after catch opportunities, and they weren't looking for him there in the red zone for some reason. It was just very, it was very strange. And red zone efficiency numbers are kind of hard to find, but if you kind of piece it all together, they were a top 10 team in the red zone throughout the season, and they're well balanced run versus pass, and they're efficient at both of them. It was very strange, the play calls, but also shout out to the Lions defense, because I mean, they did a great job. They had to fly around, they had to defend every blade of grass, they had to make tackles and make plays, and they did time and time again in a game that you win by 1 point. When you can look at the stat sheet here and say, wow, we held them to 9 points, three field goals that all were sub 30-yard field goal attempts in the red zone. I mean, that's winning football, man. That's awesome. Ben?
Yeah, so I'm the same way as you, Simon. I really felt like, especially in that second half, that the Rams were actually playing a little bit tight. I mean, you start to look at what all they could have done and didn't in the second half. And I know it started with Stafford being banged up. You know, I'm sure that played into it. Not only the concussion possibilities there, but the other injuries he was taking as well. That was part of it. And I realized that, listen, when you're playing some of these games, man, it's just tough. And when you make it difficult on yourself in the red zone, that adds to it. But even so, we saw McVay not once, not twice, but three different times where he had fourth and sevens, fourth and eights, fourth and tens. He went the safe route all three times in the second half. And I just felt like, man, in a game like this, of all games in which you should be trying something aggressive, we've just had the entire season of coaches doing nothing but be aggressive. And I know it's not fourth and three. These are fourth and longers. But still, it just felt like the Rams were playing very tight in the second half after a first half in which, boy, they were just on fire along with the Lions. And I expected more of that in the second half. We didn't get it. And, you know, so I love McVay. He's done a fantastic job all season. But I kind of felt like the Rams should have won this game too, to be honest. I mean, when I look at everything here, I was like, man, they had opportunities to maybe win by 10, quite honestly. Instead, mm-hmm. they lose by one. So, fun game. I'm happy with the Lions. I think the right team won, if you want to put it that way, because I would have hated to see Detroit lose this game. But still, man, the Rams, I thought, had it there on the table, and it just got away from them, is how I felt. Ronan?
No, I agree, because there were ample opportunities for the Rams to obviously take that win. You know, three red zone trips, no touchdowns to show for it. You know, even if, man, you score one touchdown, right, on one of those drives, and, that's you it. Know, that changes the course of the game. Right. But – right. You again, like you guys were saying, kudos to the Detroit defense. They stepped up whenever their backs were up against the wall and forced the Rams to have to settle. You look at McVay going for the fourth and mediums, the fourth and longs. They lost by a point, so I truthfully, I'm not too mad about it. Because on the flip side, right, they could go one of three on those fourth downs and be down 10 plus points, right? So I personally didn't hate the way that McVay called the game. Well, there were a couple route concepts and stuff that are questionable, like Simon was mentioning. But in terms of settling for three, I think most of the time they were in a situation where they almost had to, Simon.
Yeah, here's another series that I didn't love from the Rams in this one. End of the first half, Rams get the ball down four. There's a minute to go, and they choose not to make a run at another score. I think they had just come off of a score and then a forced punt. They were backed up pretty good, but there's a full minute, and I think they had all three timeouts. And the announcers were talking about it and kind of laughing because it was kind of an in-between situation where it was like, do the Lions use one of their timeouts to try and force the Rams to punt again? Or do the Rams call their timeout so they can try to make a run at this thing? And neither team wanted to give the other advantage. So they both ended up waiting until like 7 seconds or something. And then the Rams called one more timeout and ran one more play. And they got a freaking first down. And then they're just like, well, that's the end of the half. So, yeah, to Ben's point, the aggressiveness, I don't know if it's hubris a little bit in terms of like what they had done to that point, so don't need to be all that aggressive. And I know McVay's not, despite being now no longer the youngest head coach in the NFL, but despite being so young, he's not that aggressive of a guy. He's pretty conservative. He's pretty old school with a lot of stuff. But that was one to me. I mean, that drives me nuts when you've got that much time and that many timeouts and this good of an offense. Because what was the matchup that we talked about in this game? And it was the receivers. It was the passing game of the Rams taking on this Lions pass defense, which has struggled this year, which is where you can attack them. And it worked. I mean, Matt Stafford throws for over 300 yards. Puka Nacua has almost 200 yards receiving. But not fully leaning into that and taking advantage and not getting Cooper Kupp really weaponized in this one, right? Maybe if Cooper Kupp had been having a bigger half, they go for it at the end of the half there. Maybe some of those late field goals, maybe they feel like they can go for it. But what do you have, 5 catches for 27 yards, something like that? And it's just like, yeah, it was very strange. It was very strange. We've been talking about the Lions defense. Let's specifically here talk about one Aiden Hutchinson. Because, oh boy. He was wearing our guy Rob Havenstein like a hat all game long. I mean, just beat him time and time and time again. I mean, it was, talk about mean. Like, it was just unfair. And not just like the empty stats where that time that Stafford tripped and he touched him down, right? Let's talk about this big play here in the fourth quarter. So it's third and 14, or it's about to be fourth and four. With 4 minutes and 20 seconds to go in the fourth quarter. And it was, I don't remember the exact score at this point, but you're at the point of the game where you're like, this is maybe where McVay starts to get aggressive. And Hutch draws a holding penalty that takes it to third and 14 from the 44. So it was fourth down, 4 yards to go, 34-yard line. So you're either like, they could kick another field goal here, 51-yarder, with, you know, how you feel about Maher taking a 51-yarder. I don't know. Probably not great. But it's indoors, right? And it's a close game. You've been living on field goals, so here you go. Or fourth and four, you can go for it, see what happens. Because you're at the 34-yard line. It's a good field position to do it. But Hutchinson draws a holding penalty, takes him to third and 14 from the 44-yard line. So you've taken them out of field goal range, and you've, you know, knocked them back to a longer distance, because then the Rams tried to get it all back on third and 14. And was that the Puka Nacua one, Ronan, that we were talking about with the penalty? Was that one or the series before? Either way, I think they targeted Nacua. It might not have been the one with the penalty, but it was a similar situation. That was another one I didn't love. It was like, you should have tried to get back to that fourth and manageable, right? This is where it's like, you have two plays to get the first down, or one play to get back in field goal range. And they tried to get it all back. But Hutchinson, I mean, just all day long was, you know, getting pressures, getting sacks. They were moving him around a little bit, but really he was just going one-on-one with Havenstein all game and working him. Hutchinson is, I mean, we've been saying all year how they've been weaponizing him and using him and how good of a season he's had. Him getting to do it on the primetime stage for these next couple weeks is going to be real big for that guy who's going to be trying to win some Defensive Player of the Year trophies and all pro nods in a couple of years, Ben.
Yeah, and we'll see. And don't forget, listen, he's been quiet sack-wise for a large part of the season. 15 games, he had 6.5 sacks, which isn't bad, but it's nothing like you would expect from a high-end draft pick. 7 sacks over the last 3 games. 3 games that were close, 3 games that mattered, 3 games against good teams. He looked phenomenal. I mean, you talk about explosive. And yeah, if he keeps playing anything like that versus what he – now listen, it's not that he was bad with the first 15 weeks. We talked about them moving him around. But the, listen, by midpoint of the season, the Lions had such a weak pass rush to get to the quarterback. Draft picks were talking about bringing in more pass rush and help during the offseason. So, well, they don't need to if Hutchinson can do anything like this. All right, anything at all like this over the past 3 weeks, it is phenomenal. It's fantastic. It's what the Lions were hoping they would get out of him when they drafted him a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. If he can keep doing that, it solves a lot of problems for the Lions, not only in this set of playoffs, but for all the future playoffs that they're going to get to. So really, really love what Hutchinson is doing. Ronan, you mentioned it last week. He is just lighting it up. I mean, 7, and it's not just the sacks. Simon mentioned it. It's also the fact that he's constantly in the backfield, and that's the big thing. I don't even care about the sacks if he's constantly in the backfield. I don't even care if he gets a sack or not, to be honest. But, man, when you can see the 7 and you can see him beating this guy one-on-one, you know he's doing something devastating. So, Ronan, how do you feel about the Rams heading into the offseason?
You know, I think walking away from this game – they know what they need to address, right? Secondary is still an area of concern. So one thing I would have loved to have seen was Jordan Fuller, had he been healthy, maybe matched up against Sam Laporta rather than Hoyt. That would have been pretty sick, because Michael Hoyt was getting, I mean, sauced by everybody whenever he was dropping back into coverage. You know, whenever you got him going against Amonra or J-Mo or Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, dude, come on. I mean, talking about a 260, 270, that might be being generous, pound, you know, outside linebacker, I guess. He was a defensive end. Now he's converted outside linebackers. So whenever you got that covering a skill position, guy, especially on against a team like the Lions, that's concerning. So I'd love to see the Rams maybe go out and get a corner in the first round. Yeah, I'd love to obviously see McVay and Donald come back. I'd love to see Stafford come back. I wouldn't hate to see the Rams take someone in the second round, a quarterback, right? Maybe like a – I don't even know if any of these top guys will fall, man. Not to get into the draft, but we're looking at like 6 guys who are like, yeah, they might be a first round pick. So, you know, maybe inevitably one of them's going to fall, 2 of them might fall, 3 of them might even. So go and grabbing something like that. But, you know, I think the framework's there. They have picks, they have capital, and they have pillars to kind of work off of. So not feeling too bad, Ben.
All right. Totally understand it. One stat coming out of this game, I think, got ignored. Everybody, we've all heard all week how the Lions haven't won a playoff game since 1991, which has been, what, 31 years. The truth is, the Lions have won 2 playoff games in the past 65 years. This has never, since the 50s, been a team, a franchise that has won anything significant. And they're on the verge here of maybe doing that. And maybe they get more playoff wins in one season here than they've had in the past 65 years. Whether they do or not, it looks like they maybe can get this thing rolling again next year. And listen, that doesn't mean that they're Super Bowl team every year. But it looks like they're back on good times and maybe better times than they've had since the 1950s, to be quite honest about it. So love it for the Lions. We'll see what they can do next week in their matchup against, I believe it's Tampa Bay, right? That's who they got.
At home. Key. Very key.
Simon, any more notes on this game, buddy?
Ronan just reminded me when he mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, we should probably say his name. 7 catches, 110 yards. And there's not a receiver in the NFL that's better at catching the ball on the sideline. And it's not that he does the tightrope thing like all the receivers do. And then they like, you know, they run out of bounds before contact. And then they're like, man, I tried so hard to stay in bounds. But really, they were like, oh, I'm okay to go out of bounds and not take a hit here. Nobody is better or does more of, I'm going to catch the ball on the sideline and I'm going to run diagonal into the middle of the field because I will eat as many hits as you want to give me to get more yards. I love that dude, man. He's so much fun.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic receiver. I look forward to what he can do next week. We'll see. As the stage only gets bigger for Detroit. There are three more games we're going to cover from this week's playoff. We'll do it right after this break.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds on Favorite, presented by BoxScore Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds on Favorite, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes. And that's Tricky with two I's.
Welcome back in, everyone. Appreciate you being with us as always. We mentioned that we got three more playoff games to cover. They were not as close as a couple that we did, but the Packers beat the Cowboys 48-32. There were a few people out there that said, hey, watch out for the Packers, but nobody could have predicted the beatdown, the absolute bloody beatdown in Dallas that Green Bay put on the Cowboys. Simon, first take, man.
Wow. Just wow. There's a lot to get into here. Let's start with the first thing that got called out by our pal Greg Olson. We stand Greg Olson on this podcast here, calling plays, best color guy in the league. The Cowboys were playing really heavy zone in this game against the Packers, which they do not normally do. They're usually a very heavy man team. The only thing I could come up with for why they made this, and like it torched them. Like it's the reason why they lost the game, because Jordan Love was able to just sit back there, and him and Romeo Dobbs were just picking this zone apart. The only thing I can point to and think of for why they did this so out of character move for no reason was if they thought, okay, Love, if we go man and he starts just like peppering his receivers quick, right? Because he's just like, oh, they're in man. Okay, let's just throw where the corner isn't. We won't be able to get to him with Micah Parsons in our pass rush. So let's be in zone. We can try to disguise what we do. We can do some, you know, post-snap rotations. We'll mix it up. We'll try to confuse him because he's a first time. It's his first playoff game. And that'll give our pass rush time. Well, it doesn't matter, man. Jordan Love, I mean, they did it. The Packers did it. They have another franchise quarterback, Matt LaFleur. My matchup going into this game was LaFleur versus Dan Quinn. LaFleur had that man ready for Dan Quinn. They were just like on top of everything they need to be on. They could run when they want to, pass when they want to, go deep, hit the running back, whatever. So my, just like as this game was watching, just watching this Cowboys defense, which had tailed off by the end of the year in terms of the turnovers and the aggressiveness and just the domination. But that started the year so freaking stifling on defense and just getting picked apart. I mean, pass by pass by Jordan Love. It was really just like death by a thousand paper cuts. It was crazy to watch. Ronan, what about you getting into this game?
Simon, you're exactly right. What stands out to me is the pair of hat tricks for Green Bay, right? Three passing touchdowns for Jordan Love on top of his 272 yards, 16 for 21 completion ratio. Aaron Jones, 21 carries, 118 yards, three touchdowns. So, I mean, both guys went off, ground, air. The Packers just dominated. Romeo Dobbs had a good game, young receiver. That's kind of been the Packers' thing, right? Do they have receivers or, you know, skill guys in general that can compete with the rest of the league? And, you know, this season I think has proved that they do. And you know what? You had another one into there, and that might be a very dangerous team. But, man, Jordan Love, golly. first playoff win, huge win over a favorited opponent. Are we looking at the air? I know we talk about it, right? We all kind of joke about it, but like, this might be a legit thing, guys. This might be the Packers quarterback for the next 8 to 10 years. What a showing by Jordan Love. I can't wait to see if this is just the beginning, right? We might be seeing, you know, the first of 10, 20 playoff wins. So fun time in Green Bay, Ben.
Fun times in Green Bay, not in Dallas. That's kind of the shocking thing. I was prepared here to kind of give a hats off to Dallas before this game of them kind of proving me wrong, because I had picked Philadelphia to win the division. I was like, wow, Dallas shows up. They win the division. They're looking pretty good. You know, kind of go up against this young quarterback in Green Bay here and you know, move on, right? Maybe you give up a couple touchdowns to him and you just move on. And no, man, before you know it, it's 7-0, 14-0, 21-0. I think it was 27-0 at one point. It was two picks by Prescott. The defense looked awful. The Packers looked fantastic. I mean, just what happened here, you know? I mean, there was no reason. There was no real reason for the Cowboys to have lost this game. The Cowboys should have won this game. Vegas figured they would win this game. Most people figured they would win this game. And they just don't. I mean, 48-32 or 40, whatever it ended up being. It was a joke. It was just a real joke here. There was no reason for the Cowboys to lose this game this way. Absolutely none. And yet they just get roasted. So hats off to the Packers. And again, this is one reason I wanted to see Jordan Love in the playoffs. Just get a glimpse at what he would do. I didn't expect this. But good gosh, we got it, man. And he just unloaded. You know, what I do like the best about Jordan Love is, and listen, I'm not going to jump on the Aaron Rodgers bandwagon. I'm not going to compare him to a Hall of Famer. I know I've heard people do it, Ronan. I know you're on it, man. And you might be right, but I'm not going to jump on it this quick. We've seen what defenses can do. Even, listen, a year ago it was Jalen Hurts, right? Everybody was toasting Jalen Hurts. Now a year later it's like, well, maybe against some blitzes and maybe when he's not healthy. Well, maybe that's who he is, you know? Maybe he's somewhere in between. So we'll see. And I love Jordan Love. But what I like best about him is that he throws a lot of touchdowns. He doesn't throw any interceptions. And he's done it for half a season now. And he's done it in games that mattered. And he's done it against good teams. And he's done it on the road. And he's done it at home. And he's done it when the defense has given up a lot of points. And he's done it. Listen, he's done it in every situation. He's done it when he needed to come from behind. He's done it when they needed to just jump on the team like the Cowboys right from the get-go. So there is no way in which he hasn't done it. And, you know, we'll see what defenses have in store for him next season and if he's good enough to rally and get past that. Maybe he is. But for now, I just love what he's doing. And they've got every chance to think they can win the game next week. I mean, why would they think they can't beat San Francisco? You know, I don't know of any reason why they wouldn't think that. I'm sure they're rolling in thinking, hey, we definitely can. So, listen, I absolutely really enjoy watching what Jordan Love has been doing these past, I don't know, 2.5 months now he's been doing this. And to do it in the playoffs on the biggest stage against the Dallas Cowboys, it doesn't really get any bigger than that unless you get to the Super Bowl. So hats off to Jordan Love. It has been fantastic. Simon?
Yeah, I mean, 21-1 touchdown to turn interception ratio since week, I don't know what week that is, since November 19th. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's absolutely crushing. It's time to bury Mike McCarthy, guys, because – Olsen pointed this out on the broadcast. Everyone, you know, Warren Sharp was tweeting about it after the first couple drives. I went back and watched the first half again this morning. What is this guy doing? I mean, the run game had been bad all year, just straight up bad. And listen, it was working. You know, to his credit, when they were in the right situation early in this game, you know, Tony Pollard was getting real successful run, like 10-yard runs. But the inability to see what was right in front of him in terms of whenever the Packers were in a 5-man front, and they were doing this when the Cowboys would bring out 12 personnel, when it was second and short or second and medium, Cowboys bring out the extra tight end. Packers like, cool, we're going to bring in another defensive lineman. And they would just run little Tony Pollard right up the middle against five big 280-pound dudes and get no yard, like over and over again. And it wasn't until late in the second quarter when McCarthy was like, maybe I should go back to letting Dak Prescott pass the ball a little bit and see how that works, because it only worked, you know, all season long. And by then, you know, most of the damage was done. The Packers, I got to give Joe Barry some credit here. because around the, you know, just north of the 2-minute warning, the Cowboys get the ball back, and Dak's slinging it around. He's doing his thing against the Joe Barry defense. And then coming out of the 2-minute warning, you know, so the Cowboys are driving out of the 2-minute warning. The first play, they run a post snap low rotation where Darnell Savage rotates down perfectly, just jumps in front of CeeDee Lamb, who had a terrible first half. He and Dak were not on the same page at all. And he gets that pick six, and that was when the game, you know, was over. And look, shout, you know, the Cowboys had, what, 23 points in the second half. I mean, they kind of made a little bit something of it at the end, but by then it was too late. And just watching Mike McCarthy for four drives in a row run the ball into five man fronts with Tony Pollard was pretty demoralizing to see, because it was just like in those runs, you could see their season end. It was just like, okay, this is it. This is what we were worried about when Kellen Moore was gone and Mike McCarthy says, I want to run the ball more. We were like, I don't know how that's going to come go playoff time. And I've said it multiple times. We all said it. It wasn't going to be an issue in the regular season. They were going to win 11, 12 games again. But how does it work in the playoffs? And when McCarthy wants to run the ball no matter what, and he does it against a brick wall over and over again, you just see the game and the season slip away. It's real tough. So we got our last team available. We'll talk coach firings here in approximately 6 minutes. But we found another team for another good coach to go to next year, guys. So excited about that.
Ronan, if you're – and you don't have to give us a long explanation, but just real quick, if you're an Eagles fan or a Cowboys fan, who do you feel better about heading into the offseason?
That is a good question, Ben. Wow. I'd have to say the Eagles. It just feels like there's more going for them. You know, obviously, Jason Kelce is a guy that you might lose in the offseason. You might lose a couple more pieces here and there. But honestly, you know, I'm not saying that losing Kelce is for the better, but it all might be for the better. Some turnover is needed. Those corners are, you know, I don't want to say old and slow, but they're up there in age and not moving.
I'll say it. They're old and slow. They're not as young and not as fast as they once were.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think turnover would be very beneficial in Philly, Ben.
All right. Moving on. The Chiefs beat the Dolphins 26-7. In a game in which the weather, I don't know if the weather played a big part in the outcome so much as it was just a real big talking point for everyone. But listen, the Dolphins really didn't have much going on in this game, and the Chiefs took it to them. Simon?
I mean, yeah, I think the weather was a huge factor. The Dolphins, I'm sorry to say this, were not built for this game. I mean, did you even see the opening kickoff? Like, they couldn't even kick the ball straight, you know, 50 yards off a tee. I mean, the opening kickoff was bad. The Miami punter, even his first punt went like 25 yards and just shanked to the – like, they could not play in this weather whatsoever. And meanwhile, Kansas City just had no problems moving this ball around. And if it wasn't for, what, that 53-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek, which was the classic Tua Tagovailoa pass because it was only completed because it was underthrown by about 10 yards – if we don't have that touchdown, like, this is a shutout game. It's insane. So, yeah, this game was over before it started, man. I don't know if the Dolphins were mentally shaken by the cold or just, like, physically couldn't show up because of it, or it was just a classic Dolphins lose to a good team or a combination of all three. But, yeah, the Dolphins were not in this game for even 1 minute of game time, Ben. Ronan, how'd you feel about this one?
Simon, you're completely right. I've been a Dolphin defender this season. I was pretty bought in. I thought with what they had, you know, Tua, I've been a bit of a Tua defender as well. But I'm more bought into, you know, what's, you know, around on that roster between Tyreek Hill, between Mostert, between McDaniel, and how, you know, good of a mind he is. I've been bought into Miami, but you know, then all throughout the season, you see that post from that Instagram or that Twitter account where it's like a reminder that Miami's win percentage against 500 or better teams is this. And it's like, oh, crap, hold on, wait. And then they go up against the Chiefs and the snow, and it's a buzzsaw. And you're exactly right, Simon. They just weren't in the fight at any point. So disappointing end of the season for Miami. You're going to have to kind of take a step back. I think if you're a shot caller in Miami and kind of analyze the situation, right? Because, I mean, you took Tua, right, over Justin Herbert, who's gotten paid. Joe Burrow has also gotten paid. So, you know, is Tua a guy that you want to pay, or are you going to start looking other directions here moving forward? Because, I mean, you know how much McDaniels loves Tua. I mean, dude will, like, die on the Tua hill. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they go about this offseason, Ben.
Yeah, and to be fair, I do feel like the weather played a difference in the spread between the two teams. I was so biased against Miami coming into this particular game, I didn't think they had any chance to just win this game at all. I mean, I just didn't. Weather aside, had it been, a normal 40-degree game in Kansas City, I still didn't think Miami had any chance. They just had nothing coming into this game. I mean, they got people playing out there that hadn't played all year on defense. Some teams do and have done it very well. Miami didn't. They had no momentum. The offense hasn't done well against good teams. It hasn't done well against on the road. I just didn't see it for Miami in this game. And this was ugly. Simon, any more notes on this game, man?
Just you're right to point out everybody that got banged up and more guys got hurt in this one. And I still think it might speak to a little bit how they are built. But yeah, just not healthy, much like the way last year ended. No real shot in this one. And to your point about, like, maybe the weather wasn't even as big a factor, we still got the classic, like, Tua, like, got under some pressure, tried to throw over the middle to a route he thought would be open because that's the offense, into triple coverage, and he overthrows the guy by 5 feet, and it's an interception. So, like, we still got all the classic bad Tua and Dolphins things, and then some additional ones that were clearly also because of the cold. So, yeah, that's it. You know, go Dolphins.
It's a fair point. I really do feel like had this game been at 40 degrees, then the Chiefs would have won, you know, 20. They get their 20, right?
23-13, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So, all right. The Texans beat the Browns. Ronan, first stab.
Golly, that got ugly quick. Oh, my God. You know, the back-to-back pick sixes just kind of sums up how this game went. Joe Flacco gave a very valiant effort here at the end of this season, but it's C.J. Stroud time. 16 to 21, 274 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a playoff win in his rookie year. Go ahead and add that to the list, along with, unfortunately for Puka Nacua, Offensive Rookie of the Year, because good grief, this kid's good. And then on the flip side of it, guys, that defense is good too. D'Amico Ryans has those guys right. Now, obviously, you know, Cleveland's offense isn't necessarily the best, right? Backup quarterback, backup running back, but they held Cleveland's run game, 20 attempts, 56 yards, 1 touchdown. That's 2.8 a clip. Shutting them down, Ben.
Yeah, Simon.
Yeah, if it wasn't for a couple explosive plays by the Browns' touchdowns, this would have looked even worse, which is crazy to say. David Njoku had a big, like, 50-yard pass or 50-yard catch, and they were able to run it in from the low red zone. And then Harrison Bryant, the other tight end, had a big, like, 40-some yard catch and run that kept them in it before those pick sixes. But those definitely sealed it, and you could even feel it because after the first one, right, the score is what, 31-14 after that first pick six, just on the at the start of the second half there, and then they're already going for it on fourth down from their own 33-yard line, right, the very next series. So you could feel Stefanski was already feeling tight, feeling the pressure. And then, yeah, man, two pick sixes in a row. The Joe Flacco special, right? It took me right back to, you know, 2015, 2014 range. Yeah, and that was, like, listen, C.J. Stroud doing what he did to that Cleveland defense, doing it while taking plenty of pressure because the Browns defensive line got, you know, had their wins in this one. But man, Stroud's a bad dude, guys. Stroud's the real one. Yeah, I've got nothing else to add. This game was just like whole first half was just like play action, deep shot for both teams, and it was really, really fun until it wasn't as fun anymore, right? It's big brother or big sibling versus little sibling, right? You're wrestling in the living room, you think it's all going well, and then little sibling hits their head on the table and you're like, oh shoot, shoot, don't tell mom, don't tell mom. Like that's what this was. It was really fun until it wasn't. You clearly see which one was outmatched, at least in this week. And yeah, tough to see, unless you're also a fan of an AFC North team whose team lost, so it's great to see.
Me personally, since I'm not a fan of an AFC North team whose team also lost, I hated to see this for Cleveland. I'm thrilled to death to watch Houston do this, from D'Amico Ryans to CJ Stroud to everybody else in the building. I'm enjoying that. But to watch Cleveland, because Cleveland had nobody had more injuries than Cleveland during the regular season. I mean, there were some teams that had just as many, but nobody had more and worse. And yet Cleveland found a way to win and keep winning and keep winning, and then drag Joe Flacco in off the street and keep winning by bigger margins. And so it was just, man, it was almost too good to be true. And it just came to a crashing end here all at once. I wish they could have at least just lost a close game in which CJ Stroud beats them at the end, right? For them to go down this way in just a beat down in the second half with back-to-back interception pick sixes for Joe Flacco, who'd had such a fantastic year. Just a real stinker of a way to head into the offseason if you're the Cleveland Browns. They kind of deserved better, but oh well. I mean, that's the way it goes. So hats off to the Cleveland Browns for having a good season, finding a way to fight through. Really, really love it. The energy in the building, the defensive side of the football, Flacco's little storybook run there. I absolutely love it, but I hate it here for the Browns to end it this way. Ronan, final notes on this game?
You know what? I'm very excited to see CJ Stroud carry on throughout this postseason. And this is not going to be the last time we see him, guys. The AFC South is surprisingly getting a little bit more competitive between the Jags and the Texans. So it's going to be fun between those two guys to see who prevails. But Cleveland's defense is no joke. They need to get everything figured out over there because they have the makings of a very good team, Ben.
Simon.
Just injury notes. Noah Brown, the wide receiver, officially got placed on season-ending IR today. He's been battling injuries all throughout the year. He hurt his shoulder in this game. And to backtrack a bit, Kingsley Enagbare, the defensive end edge rusher from the Packers, rotational guy, tore his ACL in this one. So a couple depth injuries for a couple teams here, but overall, I mean, Terrell Bernard, we'll see how bad that injury is, but pretty clean weekend in terms of guys playing next week still being healthy, Ben.
Yeah, and listen, the Texans got to go on the road to the Ravens. That's a brutal matchup for Houston. I kind of hate that for them. But I will say, CJ Stroud, man, you're here. Try to take advantage. They're going to be trying. They got a chance to actually win that game. Brutal matchup notwithstanding. I often think, a year ago at this time, we were talking about how the Eagles were just unstoppable. And now a year later, they're a mess. And we've seen, you go back to Dan Marino in the 80s, and he gets in the Super Bowl either his rookie season or his second year, and he never goes back. You never know how many chances you're going to get. Even with the Texans franchise, we had Deshaun Watson, what, 6 years ago, lighting people up in the playoffs, and they kind of lose out, and everybody's like, that's okay, man. He'll have a bunch more. Well, he hasn't, So you never know for sure. And while it's a tough matchup here in Baltimore against the Ravens, I get it. It's tough. They're a buzzsaw. And Lamar Jackson's playing really well. This is the time is now. I mean, it can't be next year or 5 years from now. We'll see about that. But if you're CJ Stroud, man, go out there guns blazing, and see what you can do. All right. I think that's all the games we're going to cover because that's all there were. So we're going to move on to the news section of our stuff this week. The Seahawks fire Pete Carroll, rolling it's in your division, so first dibs on it, man.
It is a little bit of a, I guess, lackluster season for the Seahawks this year. Didn't make the playoffs. They were right on that cusp of, right towards the end of the season. I think week 17, 18, they were still in it. But I don't hate the move. At the time, I was a little taken aback just because he is a very good coach. His locker rooms love him. But it might be a time for a little bit of a refresh in Seattle. Jeez, can't think of where the Seahawks are from. But they have a young-ish core there, but they also have some veterans. So I think it's an attractive job for any head coach. I think there are guys that we can talk about in a little bit that could potentially walk in there and really help that team out. But on the flip side of it, Pete Carroll is still a good coach, obviously up there in age. But, you know, I think he's been moved to an advisory role in the front office, but it's not – the door's not shut on him becoming a coach. So it's going to be interesting to see how Carroll navigates through this offseason. I'd love to see him coach. There are a couple teams where I think he could actually be a pretty decent fit. But Simon, what were your thoughts on Pete Carroll getting fired?
Yeah, I was super surprised, obviously, and then super emotional because then you watch the couple press conferences he did before he was fired, and you know he's not only saying he wants to be here from a competitive standpoint, he's just like, I'm not tired, I could still do this, and you're like, yeah, you could still do it, Pete. And then he gets choked up, and they sent him out for a press conference after being fired. Like, when do you don't really see that, right, very often. Belichick, we'll talk about him, had his, but like, that's the quote unquote mutual parting away. This was like, Pete, we just fired you, but how about you go out and tell the media about how we just fired you? Does that sound good? Can you do that for us on the way out, pal? Real twisted stuff. And you're just, he's getting choked up, and you're like, how could they do this to Pete? And then you look at the numbers, and you're like, well, he is the defensive-minded guy, and the defense is bottom five for the last couple of years, and can we really fix the defense if he's still, you know, we said it last week talking about Wink Martindale, could he go there? And it's like, no, because, you know, Pete's there, he's going to do his thing on defense. And it seems like a lot of this has to do with, I shouldn't say it seems like, it's been rumored that a lot of this has to do with ownership wanting to move in a new direction at the quarterback and Pete not wanting to and the coaching staff not wanting to. And, you know, whatever they decide to do, I think we'll know by what kind of head coach they pick or they hire, I should say. We'll know a little bit more about what direction they might head with that. But yeah, very surprised initially. But from a football standpoint, when you kind of look back through it, you're like, all right, it can make sense. But yeah, I'm very excited to see where Pete's going to be next year. I think there's a very small chance that he's not an NFL head coach next year. So I'm excited to see it. Ben?
I hope he is coaching somewhere next year. I think it's more fun if he is. Now, I will say I wish they hadn't done it, but I think Seattle felt like they had to. I wish they felt like they didn't have to, but I really feel like they felt like it's been 9 years, almost a decade, since they lost that Super Bowl to the Patriots that they really should have won. Ever since then, they haven't been back to an NFC title game. They've been in the playoffs most years, and they've won double-digit wins, I think, five times since then. They've only had one losing record since then. So the success has been there, but not the large success that they were on. And this is an entirely new team that was there from a decade ago when they lost that Super Bowl. And I feel like the general manager there in Seattle felt like that it's either going to be me or Pete, and it's not going to be me. And I want to go in a new direction. Pete wants to keep Geno. Pete wants to keep seeing what he can do here with Geno. And I really feel like there's a lot of pressure there on the Seattle general manager to get this done. And if Pete wasn't going to go along with the flow, then it was time to move on. And I really feel like Seattle felt like they had to do this. I think the general manager felt like they had to do it. And I think ownership, which Simon mentioned on our podcast Saturday, our YouTube videos, that ownership's going to be changing. So I don't think any of that bodes well, because if you're John Schneider, you don't generally get general manager jobs somewhere else. That's extremely rare. You basically get your one shot, even if you're good at it. And if you're thrown out with Pete in a year, then you may not get another shot if you're John Schneider. So I really think he felt like he had to do this. And, you know, it would have surprised me less 2 years ago when he came off that 7-10 record. But here with back-to-back 9-8 records, I was not expecting it. But I think Seattle felt like they had to do it. Simon, anything else here on this one?
No, I just want to go ahead and plug. Yeah, Ben's YouTube channel, Sports and Money KC, on Saturday. Ben and I went through all of the coaching jobs. We'll talk about a few more of them here tonight. But if you want real in-depth stuff on what teams could be looking for and who could go where and our feelings about all the firings in depth, go check that out. Sports and Money KC. We'll put the link in the description of this episode. Go check those videos out. But yeah, that's it for Pete Carroll.
All right, Ronan, I'm going to give you first shot on Titans firing Mike Vrabel because me and Simon talked about it pretty in-depth. We've got probably a couple of new thoughts here. But Ronan, first shot on that.
Man, okay. I don't know what your guys' thoughts on the whole situation were. I heard rumblings, right? I live relatively close to Nashville, so on just driving to school and whatever, over the radio, sometimes you hear, Mike Vrabel needs to get traded. And I would sit there and think to myself, that's hilarious. No shot. They move on from Vrabel. He's a good coach. I don't think he's necessarily the problem. I don't think he was, you know, helping an extraordinary amount, you know, with that whole situation. But I think there are bigger problems at hand for Tennessee, and I don't think it was all on Vrabel. But yet, the Titans don't even trade him. They just fire him. And the reasoning behind it, because the process would take too long. And, you know, I get it. You want to, you know, get your interviews in with these head coaching candidates. But let's stop acting like this is one of the more attractive head coaching spots, right? This is one of the, I guess, more of a rebuild of the options that are available right now. Because you look at it, teams like, you know, maybe Dallas. You look at the Chargers. You look at Atlanta. These are teams that already kind of have a frame, and you know, you can just kind of build off of that moving forward. Titans, you don't really know what you can keep and what you need to let go of. So I love Vrabel as a coach. I think he's going to – I hope that he's going to get a job right away. Maybe somewhere like Vegas if they can't keep AP. I didn't love the move for Tennessee to fire Vrabel, and I truly hope he gets a job here soon, Simon.
Yeah, I think this was another, but maybe even more aggressive version of the Pete Carroll one, which was Vrabel wasn't on board with Will Levis and the direction of going younger. I won't get into the full thing again, but so go check out the YouTube page for that. But basically, ownership put out a statement when they fired him. Again, it was very aggressive. Mike Vrabel has been fired by the Tennessee Titans. This was no mutual parting of ways. This is no special advisor. This is no trade. We fired him. He was bad at his job, so we got rid of him. And I'm not saying he's actually bad at his job, but that's what happened. Where it was like, we want to move forward with a collaborative and aligned mission and effort and yada yada. So basically, Mike Vrabel wasn't on board with what we wanted to do. We know he wanted to stick around with Ryan Tannehill as long as possible. We know he wanted to stick around with Derrick Henry as long as possible. And when it seems like those guys are on their way out, just don't think he was ever fully on board first the Malik Willis train and then the Will Levis train. So I think that's what it comes down to. And yeah, Ronan's funny that you said this isn't going to be that attractive of a job. So what do they need to hurry up for? When Ben and I did the YouTube videos, not to spoil those, but we were kind of like, we could come up with a fun one for this, but they're probably just going to end up getting Brian Callahan from the Bengals or Bobby Sloak from it's just like the step below hotshot offensive coordinator guy that you want is where they'll end up. And it could all work out. Those guys have done really good jobs on offense this year and for a couple years in Callahan's case. But yeah, they're not going to get the first or second wave of guys to come here to Tennessee. They're going to somebody that's okay with, you know, second year Will Levis and trying to build around that, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Vrabel ends up for sure, because I'm sure it's not somewhere with a young quarterback, and there's fewer of those jobs than not. Ben, you want to jump in here on Titans and Vrabel?
Yeah, so I got some advice for Vrabel, and I've got a prediction for Vrabel to go along with it, okay? It's a little bit different spin on it than what I've got. So first of all, Mike Vrabel, just take a year off. Unless you get the offer you want and the spot you want, with the team you want and the general manager you want and the quarterback you want, take the year off, man. You know, just take the year off, enjoy it, get fresh, take a few vacations, see the family, do some TV, enjoy that. Next year, maybe the Jets job opens up after the Aaron Rodgers and Bob Sala show is over. Maybe that opens up. Maybe the Saints job opens up next year and they're ready for a rebuild and you're part of it. My second part of the advice for Vrabel is don't try to be a general manager. Just focus on the coaching. I mean, you're a heck of a coach. I don't think you're a great general manager. Most guys aren't. That's not a shot at Vrabel. Most guys just can't do both. It's just not that way. And so, you know, if you can find a general manager that you can work with that will listen to you input, then great. Find that spot. And my prediction for Vrabel is whenever he goes back to coaching, I think he's going to stay in his next spot for 20 years. And I think he wins one Super Bowl during that time. I think that's him. I mean, that's just what I think of him. I don't necessarily think he's a top five head coach in the league or even a top eight. But I do think that he's a heck of a football coach. And I think he's going to do it for a very long time. And he just needs to find his right spot. And I think he's got a very good chance at winning the Super Bowl sometime during his tenure when he does. So that's my advice and prediction for Vrabel. And, you know, none of that would surprise me over the next two decades since we continue to watch NFL football and do our podcast here. Simon, final take here on Vrabel.
Just that Ben secured a 20-year contract on this podcast by making that prediction. We gotta wait it out, guys. Here we go. Everybody get ready. Buckle in.
Less of a surprise, the Patriots move on from Bill Belichick and promote Gerard Mayo, which also was not a surprise, but we didn't necessarily, apparently nobody knew that it was basically written in that this would happen. So Roland, first take on Mayo and Belichick.
Wow, what an end to an era. Obviously, Bill Belichick is one of, if not the best coaches of all time. Obviously, known more for his defensive mind, or maybe solely for his defensive mind. I don't know how much say he has offensively. But, you know, Gerard Mayo stepping in, he was a guy who played for Belichick, has been coaching for a couple of years now, been in this system. I believe it was in his contract that he was going to be the heir, right? So this is something that the entire organization has prepared for. This is something that, you know, key players knew about, right? This isn't some, you know, shock that might make, you know, a guy like Matt Judon upset or, you know, what have you. So I think it's a good transition to an era. You know, not because they were both linebackers, but I'd like to say that it's hopefully going to give a vibe of like a DeMeco Ryans, right? Just like an infusion of youth and hopefully some, I don't know, chemistry, because it's been pretty rough in New England these past couple of years between quarterback competitions and just, you know, people maybe not buying into the Patriot way. It's going to be interesting to see how the Patriot way lives, right? Is it going to be altered or is it going to stay the same? Or are we going to have, you know, maybe some more? Well, I guess press conferences in New England have always been pretty entertaining for the wrong reasons, but, you know, maybe we'll have some more entertaining press conferences for the right reasons. Great for Gerard Mayo. I don't think Bill Belichick is done yet, though. If he still wants to come and coach, I think there will be multiple teams who will be more than happy to have him in, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got the report today that he officially interviewed with the Atlanta Falcons. Have you guys ever seen a team Twitter account post a graphic with a coach that they've interviewed before? I don't think I've ever seen that. The Atlanta Falcons Twitter account, literally a graphic with Bill Belichick and their logo behind him. We have interviewed Bill Belichick for it. I mean, talk about pandering. Not that Bill Belichick's on Twitter, or no one's gonna see it. I'm sure his family doesn't even have smartphones, but my gosh, that was insane. I'm just looking back at the box score because I didn't pay attention to Jets Patriots at all. Breece Hall ran for 178 yards in week 18 against the Patriots. My goodness. How about the Tom Brady and Bill Belichick Patriots eras ending with Tom Brady's last pass being a pick six to the Titans and Belichick losing by two touchdowns to the Jets? You'll love to see it. You'll love to see it. But yeah, he'll be a coach next year. He'll probably make the playoffs. He'll get his all-time wins record across a couple seasons here. Draw Mayo, I'm excited about. I think it'll be just enough of the Patriot way to keep Robert Kraft happy and the players that signed up for everything happy with it. And then, but hopefully enough of the forward thinking to find the right quarterback in here, get the right OC in here and start moving things in the right direction, Ben.
Yeah, so I'm going to add an additional spin on the mayo thing that I didn't in all of our work on Saturday. And I want to be clear, I like Mayo. I like everything I've heard about him. I like what I've seen from his work. There's nothing I don't like about Mayo and the fact that they've hired him. But there are a lot of things that can go wrong here. You know, they haven't hired a general manager yet. And even if they pull him from inside the building, and even if he's kind of got a Patriot mindset, still, he didn't pick out the head coach. The owner did. And so you never know. You just never know at what point that leads to a bit of a power struggle or a little bit of folks feeling a certain way about things as they continue to work every day, that the general manager didn't pick the coach here. The coach got picked by the owner. So that's one thing. The other thing you've got is if, for whatever reason, Mayo's running the defense great but can't get the offense figured out, listen, this Boston crowd isn't going to be much kinder than the Philadelphia crowd. I mean, they're just not. They're not going to be saying sweet things, and they're not going to be saying, hey, give them 4 or 5 years. They want them in now. They are not going to be very patient. So 1 year is about all the patience they're going to offer from a fan's perspective there in Boston. You know, and I don't see a quick turnaround here, to be honest. I think it's going to take some time, and Mayo deserves some time, but that Boston crowd is not going to want to give it to him. So he's going to have to find some way to at least be competitive very quickly. And then you've just got the offensive problems, which Bill couldn't fix. I mean, without Brady, Bill couldn't fix them. So Mayo's got his work cut out for him there to not only find an OC, but to find the right quarterback, and then to get some talented pieces there to go along with it. There's a lot of work to do here. So Mayo could actually be a fantastic head coach and still get canned in 2 to 3 years. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong here, even though I really like Mayo. And I want to be clear on that. I do like the hiring here. There's a lot of potential for trouble here in New England, and we'll just see how it works out over the next couple of seasons. Simon?
Yeah, the OC hire is going to be very interesting. I'm very, very curious to check that out.
Lots of fun stuff. By the way, to our audience, we're going to be here the entire offseason. We have so much to get to. Matter of fact, me and Simon have kind of been biting our tongues a little bit on offseason takes because we wanted to hit some stuff that was regular season and playoffs here. But we are loaded for the offseason, so stay with us. We're going to hit a ton of things. One last bit of news. Commanders hire Adam Peters to be general manager. He came from the 49ers most recently. He also had been in the Patriots system for a little bit of time as well. Peters really was probably the big name out there for potential general manager hire, so it's not a surprise that he gets picked up this offseason. But apparently he likes the Commanders setup. And, Simon, you mentioned it. We've talked about it more than once, that it's a chance to start fresh. The energy feels good. Adam Peters was in a spot where he could have waited for 2 or 3 more years if he wanted to get a spot he liked. And apparently this is the one that he liked because he went ahead and jumped on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, shout out to the Commanders and Josh Harris and the little group that they put together, right, to go and get their guy, get the number one guy out there on the market. I mean, they moved fast on this. I mean, other than Gerard Mayo, which was literally written in his contract, he was going to be the head coach, there hasn't been any other hires yet. And they put this thing together and they did their interviews and they knocked it out of the park, which gives me a lot of hope for the direction that this group is going in and this team is going into. So it's going to make the head coach hiring all the more interesting. Cause like you said, with the Patriots, Ben, go get your GM first and then let him go get the coach. So that way the things the GM wants to do in terms of free agency and draft align with what the coach wants to coach. I'm very impressed and very happy with this move here. I will also just get my agenda off about my conspiracy. When Bob Myers joined this group with Magic Johnson and Josh Harris, they're building a basketball team, man. So I said, whoever their quarterback, whoever their first round pick is going to be, that guy better have D1 basketball offers in his history. I don't know if Drake May was offered D1 basketball offers, but his brother Luke May, NCAA champion, big time shots for UNC. You know who also played quarterback at UNC? That's not Drake May or Sam Howell. One Ben Johnson was a walk-on quarterback at UNC back in the day, so it's all coming together. It's all coming together. Ben Johnson, Drake May, welcome to Washington. Ronan, how do you feel about this?
You know what, Simon? Looking at where the Commanders were, let's say a year ago, let's say 6 months ago, and then looking where they're at today, I think there are significant strides. And, you know, I think that there is still a lot a lot more ground to cover, right? Got to find the right head coach. Probably need to make a few more personnel moves, both in the front office and the coaching staff and on the field. So good start, but not done yet, Simon.
Not done yet, indeed. Ben?
I can't wait to see who the Commanders get, because I want it to be Ben Johnson. You want it to be Ben Johnson. I'm not sure it's going to be. We'll see. I'm not sure that Adam Peters doesn't come in. He's got connections. So he's got connections all over the league. I'm not sure that he's not going to come in and make a big swing here. It won't be Belichick or Carroll, I don't think, because that's kind of bringing in old guys for new stuff. But don't be surprised if there's not some bigger name out there instead of Ben Johnson that Adam Peters goes and gets. We'll see. He's known, I'm sure, for a long time who his short list would be for candidates. And Ben Johnson's a pretty new name. So I'm not totally sure, even though you and me want him, I'm not totally sure Adam Peters is going to pull him in. We'll see. Again, fascinating offseason stuff. Simon, that's all I got.
All right, everybody, that is it for this week's episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Stat Sheet Pod. Follow Box Score Network at B Score Network. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast at Apple and Spotify. We will be back to recap the divisional round next week. Hopefully some better games on the horizon for everybody, but stay tuned. We will be back. Thank you all so much. Have a good week.